There's a lot of people who are looking up these secured party filings. So your question was, you're trying to get these secured party filings done and a few other things.
That is correct.
Okay.
And I believe, correct me if my understanding is wrong, but I believe preliminarily that's like one of the first steps that an individual must do before they can be entitled to the other benefits. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. See, that's why I wanted to, because I wanted to dispel that myth. benefits is a bad word to use, because if you're sovereign, you don't have benefits.
This is true. You're right.
But the words we use are very important.
Am I sovereign, although I'm already entered into so many unlawful contracts? I mean, theoretically, of course, I'm sovereign. I'm a living soul, but being bound by contractual obligation, in essence, I'm not really technically sovereign, right?
That's what we try to teach people, is the whole key and the reason why our website is understandcontractlawandyouwin.com is because it's all about contracts.
Got it.
And one of the most difficult things for people to comprehend is that contracts move.
What do you mean by they move? What does that mean? Transferring information from one hand to another? Is that what you mean by move?
Okay, well, let's back up. When I say contracts move, okay, let's cover the first word, contracts. What is a contract?
Are you asking me that?
You could answer if you want.
My understanding of contracts is it's an agreement, a lawful agreement between two consenting parties.
Okay, that's a good definition. Let's see. Look it up in the textbook. Here we go. Page 6 in Brian Blum's Contracts, Examples, and Explanations. It is a firm principle of contract law that the primary remedy breach of contract, trying to find. Contracting is often described as an act of private lawmaking by which persons create a kind of personalized statute to govern their relationship. One can only envisage contract as private legislation if it has the attribute of any law, recognition and enforcement through the compulsive power of the state acting through its courts. Now, something else to consider is page 57, Brian Blum's Contracts, Examples, and Explanations. In colloquial speech, people often talk of, quote, signing a contract. Strictly speaking, this is inaccurate terminology. The contract is the legal relationship between the parties, and the document that is signed is actually the record or memorial of that contract. Very interesting. So when you go into a restaurant, sit down and order food, you're engaging in a contract. If you walk out of there without paying, you know, you're in breach of contract. There's no document that needs to be signed.
Wow.
So If a police officer stops you walking down the street, or, you know, a SWAT team comes to your front door with guns in your faces and says, come with us, you're a terrorist. If you come with them, you're giving up your sovereignty. It doesn't matter what paperwork you have filed. Because you're, like I said, we talked a little bit about contracts. Now we have to talk about contracts move. So, page 10 and 11. Going to read about contracts moving. In determining whether or not a person agreed to a contract or specified contractual terms, the person's manifested conduct by words or action is given more weight than her testimonial about her actual intentions. Volition is not measured by the true and actual state of mind of a party, but by the state of mind as made apparent to the outside world. Even if a person does not really wish to enter into a contract, if he or she behaves as if the contract is desired and intended, that conduct is binding, and evidence of any mental reservation is likely to be disregarded. So therefore, you know, SWAT team comes to your front door, police officer comes, you know, stops you, you know, whatever the situation may be, and they say, you know, are you such and such? Well, you're under arrest. Come with us. That's an offer. They're giving you an offer. If you agree to their contract, if you walk out of your house and put your hands out and say, oh, you know, go ahead, handcuff me, take me in the car, and you go in with them, you're contracting voluntarily to go and get arrested. You just gave up your sovereignty. Even if you have secured party filings done, you're giving up your sovereignty because contracts move. Now, on the other hand, if you don't have a secure party paper filed, secure party filings filed, and someone knocks on your front door, someone stops you, or you're in a situation and you know you're threatened with arrest. I'm not threatened with arrest. It's just an offer. It's just an offer. All is fair in love and war, or in business, whatchamacallit, right? It's just business.
Right.
So we heard these things. They all have. It's just business, right? So someone raises their voice.
And our perception of that being reality is what causes us to do this or to do that. We don't understand it. The way that you're phrasing it, the way that you're putting it, makes it, you know, you're phrasing it and you're putting it in its simplest form. But a lot of what it is that we do or don't do is based upon what we perceive situations to be it valid or invalid. For instance, if the police pull me over, put the lights on me, et cetera, and say, hey, you're going with us, and say I decide I'm not going to get out of my vehicle, and they open my door and they pull me out, and then proceed to use excessive force, et cetera, how does that apply to this particular situation? In other words, what I'm hearing you to say is that you, in theory, you're making it seem as if we have a choice when we do, but, you know, sometimes our ability to choose to do or not to do is overridden or superseded with I would have to say, unlawful force.
Well, unlawful force is one thing. That's a great example that you bring up, because it will totally illustrate to you and the other listeners that how this works. You can have fear. That's your issue. If someone says, come with us, you know, we'd like to arrest you, is really what they're saying. But they're not saying it, maybe they're saying it in terms where the average person is going to have fear and is going to go along with it. But remember, volition is not measured by the true and actual state of mind of a party, but by the state of mind as made apparent to the outside world. Even if a person does not really wish to enter a contract, if he or she behaves as if the contract is desired and intended, the conduct is binding. So therefore, if a judge looks at that, or an outside person looks at that and says, well, they said, you know, we'd like to arrest you, and you go along with them, the judge is not going to care about whether you had fear and what you were really thinking and what your real intentions were, because that's very subjective. You can't put that on paper. What did you actually do? That's what they judge it by. What did you actually do? So when I say contracts move, you can have sovereign paperwork that you've rescinded the other contracts that you've engaged in that make you a ward of the state and that give the state or the government a interest in what you know and authority over you, but all that is a moot point if when you get into a situation and you're given the option, hey, we'd like to pull you out of the car, you know, or we'd like to whatever. If you step out of the car, you stepped out of the car and you let the cop pat you down. You can't then sue the cop for unlawful detainment. You got out of the car. You got to show by your actions and conduct, hey, I stayed in the car. If he pulls me out, that's going to look really bad on the cop. If he has no lawful purpose for pulling you out of the car, if he does so, that's going to look bad on him. You can then go and file a claim. If you're in the right there and he's in the wrong, you can use this technology to file a claim against the police officer for violating your rights. If you got out of the car and your conduct showed you did it voluntarily, well, then you don't have a claim. Especially if the cop says, come out, and you say, well, do you have a lawful, you know, do you have probable cause that I've committed a crime? And he says, no, but, you know, if you don't get out of the car, you know, do you want to do this? Sometimes the words are so interesting. He doesn't say, if you don't get out of the car, I'm going to tase you. He says, do you want to do this? He says, do you want to do this the easy way or the hard way? And you might say, well, are you threatening me? And then he might say, no, I'm not threatening you. It's very interesting how they try to get you to do something without really, I mean, if you really think like, wow, okay, this, you know, oh, if he's saying that, then just ask him, well, is that a threat? And if he says, yeah, it is a threat, and then say, huh, well, because you've got a gun and you're threatening me and I don't have a gun to protect myself and I'm not going to fight you, what I'm going to say is, sure, I will get out of the car merely because you're threatening me and you're clearly asserting your power over me and you're not treating me as a sovereign, and I'm doing it merely to protect myself over my objection under threat, duress, and coercion, and my fee schedule starts now. It's $1 million per hour. Well, let's say it's $100,000 per 10 minutes that you're going to detain and harass me in violation of my rights. And I have paperwork on file to back up that you don't have the right to do this to me. And you may want to, you know, call your watch commander over to make sure that you are doing everything in the bounds of the law. Because I'm gonna file a claim against you when you're done. What we say is we use a conditional acceptance approach, which is a way to remain sovereign and not argue. If you were to like pull out your sovereign paperwork and show it to him and be like, well, you don't have the right to harass me and do this stuff, you're actually giving up your sovereignty, because you can't, according to contract law, you can either be a creditor or a debtor. So we say you're a secured party creditor. Well, go look up and do some research into what actions and contractual actions determine you as a creditor or a debtor. You can go back and forth from status one way or the other. If you accept or conditionally accept, you're a creditor. That's why we accept our bills for value and we just set them off rather than argue about the debt and whatnot, because then we're going to lose the case. If you're in the debtor category, if you remain silent, argue, or make statements, or discuss, those all put you in the debtor category. So everything is based on presumption. No matter what paperwork you have filed, if your conduct and what you're doing puts you in the debtor status, he can only presume that you're one of their cattle. You're a U.S. citizen. You're the straw man. You're acting in the capacity of a debtor, and then he can do what he wants to you, because the United States can do whatever it wants to its property. So you got to learn how to be a creditor and how to be a debtor, and by what you do, you could be moving your contract. If you go into court and start arguing over, you know, a credit card debt or a criminal indictment, you start arguing, well, no, I'm sovereign. I have this. I did this. It's not, you just moved your contract. It's very sensitive to moving.
Okay, let me ask you this question, because what's extremely confusing about everything that you've discussed is the way that, number one, society is, in particular, without being so broad, in particular American society, when it comes to media and or information being restricted, this is information that the average or the common person is privy to, but we're just not aware of it because it is not anything that's discussed on a wide scale. So we're all under the cloud of being property. We're under the property cloud, for lack of better terms. The issue that I have with that, it's my understanding, but listening to you is kind of conflicting with my understanding. Obviously, you are educated far more than I am concerning this. But it was my understanding that I've already been entered into an unlawful contract, and that the necessity for recourse and remedy is there. Upon my birth, my mother, although I was a child, a newborn, my mother consented to me being chattel property, if you will, by the unlawful birth certificate contract, or whatever the proper terminology is, if I'm in fact using the wrong terminology. And then, of course, shortly thereafter, Social Security contract. So it's my understanding that my function, my operation is that of chattel property or a slave, if you will, or a straw man, if you will. But I was under the understanding that these things have to be amended.
you're basically correct. I wouldn't say it's an unlawful contract. I would say when you're born, you're incompetent to take care of your own affairs. You're an infant. If nobody else took care of you, you would die of starvation. You would die in a matter of days. So from the time you're born until the time you turn 18, you are in a trust, in a guardianship with your parents. And by the time you turn 18, you have a certain, you know, you have the opportunity to rescind all the contracts that the government has put in there. And that's why, you know, the secure party filing paperwork, you know, is recommended and can be helpful. But it's, you got to get the other piece of the puzzle too, because again, you could give up your contract by, you know, so what, you have paperwork on file. And the thing is, you know, you don't have to file your secure party paperwork to be able to use a lot of this, because who cares if I have paperwork that shows that, you know, I have a social security number, I have this, I have that, because it really matters what's going on right now.
You're saying who cares what paperwork or whatever you have, but everything concerning our everyday functionality in society requires the production of these, of some paperwork or these documents. An example, birth certificate, social security card, driver's license or state ID, so-called, whatever, these particular items are required, you know, for employment, for proof of us having licensing to drive vehicles, etc.
Right, so you just got to...
driver's license, etc. So these are documents that are required to... that I'm under the assumption, or I'm made to believe, that I'm required to produce upon being asked.
Well, not necessarily. You're not required to produce upon being asked. Depends who it is. If you're being hired and they agreed to hire you, okay, and then all of a sudden they want to see your social security number, well, hey, that's not part of my understanding of the agreement. You know, I don't have a social security number. If I get hired for something, I'm not showing no social security number. I don't want no social security taxes taken out. That's voluntary. No. And it's actually even public law that they don't have to. They're supposed to ask for your social security number, but if you choose not to disclose that, then they have to legally stop asking you. Now, most employers are ignorant, and they will keep, you know, 2, 3, 4 times, you know, we need your social security number, you can't work here. Well, I conditionally accept your offer upon proof of claim that you're not exempt from, I don't know the law, but whatever the law is that, you know, protects my privacy from disclosing a social security number to, you know, to work in a private contract within this jurisdiction. You know, you just show me that you're exempt from the law that says that you can't force someone to disclose a social security number, and then I'll show it to you. And they can't. And it's like when you were terminated from your job, that's a very interesting thing, because we've had people who, it depends on the understanding, but if it was to your understanding that you were going to work there for a longer period of time and that was what they promised you, you could do, you know, especially if you've got it in writing, you know, if they're going to terminate you without, and they came over and said, hey, listen, we can't, you know, you can't work here anymore, like, we got to lay some people off, da-da-da-da-da, you know, whatever. Hey, could you put that in writing? Okay, sure.
You know what?
You know?
And I asked that because that's interesting that you say that, Matt. You know what they gave me? And what they give many? I was a field technician with AT&T. What they give many technicians upon so-called termination is they give us a letter that states 29 days pending termination. And what they do is they leave that on record and never provide a document stating that your contract of employment has been literally terminated, because it's a hearsay document in the sense of suspension pending. They never give you another document. I sent emails, I sent certified letters to upper management requesting that, and I never got it.
Well, hey, interesting that you said, so first off, they give you a 30-day notice?
Yes, sir, they gave me a 29, that's what they do. What happens is, the steps are, I'm IBEW Local 21. Okay, I understand I'm a private sector employee working for a private sector employer, which was AT&T Corporation.
right, so if you're talking about a, quote, termination or a, quote, lien or a levy or any of this stuff, it's all, they're all just moving the contract. So that's why they had to send you a notice in writing, because your contract was, hey, I'm working here until further notice.
They didn't send it to me. They handed it to me at the end of my work shift, and there are no signatures on it. The signature lines are blank, if that makes a difference. I don't know if that makes a difference. Now, long story short, throughout the process of everything that was happening to me last year, I went to the Illinois Department of Human Rights, filed a series of what I felt were discrimination charges, and I wrote a series of letters via certified mail and sent them to upper management. They did receive the documents stating everything that was happening to me. And long story short, the Illinois Department of Human Rights sent me a document last week stating that my charges were being dismissed for lack of substantial evidence. So they're saying I have evidence, but not substantial. And then they sent me an appeal document to appeal. It's like a big miracle round, a big circus, if you will.
Yeah, so what
more evidence could I produce? Their argument was a similarly situated employee, namely a white or a Caucasian employee, to compare myself to, but my hub on my particular garage location was 99% black or African American technicians. I don't mean that derogatory in the sense of making us colorblind. I understand we're human beings and we all bleed the same blood. Got that. But concerning what it is that they require. So there's only two other technicians in my entire garage. One is an Italian guy, you know, and he's never been disciplined ever in his entire career. And then the other gentleman, I haven't been able to talk to him. I did talk to the first guy I mentioned, but the other gentleman I haven't been able to get in contact with, because I'm under the impression that I'm banned from the premises. I'm banned from any correspondence or interaction or whatever. I'm kind of like, I feel like I'm stuck in a rock and a hard place.
Right, so let me interject here.
And then if I can receive the funds that I was receiving as far as the wages that I earned, I would be able to make better decisions concerning business and everything else, man. It's, you know, instead of living, a lot of the decisions that I made, I lived ignorantly and lived as a function as a slave. It bothers me deeply.
So what?
We can't even be effective members of society without being able to be a help, not only to ourselves first and our families, but our communities, etc. That's the only way they're going to grow.
All right, so what I would do
is... So often we heap things upon ourselves selfishly, and it bothers me being in this position after the fact now.
All right, so what I would do in that situation is I would... Did you write up a conditional acceptance letter?
No, what is that? What do I need to do?
Okay, so we'll teach you what that is, but if I was terminated and it was under no grounds and I was surprised by it and I felt it was a violation of the contract that I had with my private employer, we would type up a notice of conditional acceptance in response to your termination letter. See, what you did was, in 30 days, you didn't send any paperwork. Well, you were talking about some paperwork, but what people do is they don't send any proper paperwork, like we're talking about, conditional acceptance. So, same thing, like if the IRS is going to do a levy or someone's going to do a lien, they can't do it without getting your permission through your non-response. If they send you, if you're in a trust relationship with some employer, you know, IRS, you know, government, you know, credit card company, whatever, you have a duty to respond, and they have a duty to respond to you, to your correspondence as well. And if either party sends correspondence changing the terms of the contract, it changes the contract if they don't respond in 10 days. So that's how this works. And how do you get proof of that? Is you send your paperwork through a witness, a third-party notary whose duty it is to witness, and the notaries are there to protect sovereigns because they're agents of the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State is how the United States is the Secretary of State's office, and the agents are there to be the mediary between the foreign status diplomats and the United States. So if you're sovereign and you're foreign to the corporate United States and its private laws, the Secretary of State and the notaries are your best friend. They're there.
Okay, you're saying I can do this right now without without having filed the so-called necessary paperwork. That's what you're telling me. I can do this right now.
You could. Now, so what I would do is...
Because let me tell you this. They sent me the documents from the Illinois Department. As a matter of fact, see, just so you know, I'm not joking with you. Give me one second. I have the envelope right here, and I have the appeal letter as well. It says...
Yeah, they're doing... all that. That's all public. If you, on the private side, do your paperwork, how you would do it is a conditional acceptance. I would say, I conditionally accept your offer to terminate the employment, to move our contract from what it was. And you can only do it with your agreement and your non-response. So you would say, I conditionally accept upon proof of claim that, bullet point number one, I violated any terms of the contract, like in terms of, I failed to show up, I was tardy to work or I was I did anything that offended any of the other employers or was, whatever your terms of your contract was, you basically say, all right, you know.
Okay, because they so-called fire me for what they say is a violation of tech expectations. There is no formal tech expectation document, Matt. What they give us, there's a list of so-called tech expectations, and they do not give you the list for you to be able to cover what the tech expectations are.
Well, that's okay.
It's a loophole for them to trump that upon whatever individual they want to trump it upon, unbeknownst and at the disadvantage of the individual not knowing what the tech expectation is that they're even talking about. It's foolishness. And, they're saying you were terminated for a violation of tech expectations and what they say is a violation of the company code of business conduct for not, oh my God, it's just a list of ridiculous things. So far, from what you said, I wrote down upon proof of claim of what am I asking them? And then you're also saying get this letter notarized. I can get it notarized at a bank, correct?
No. Okay, so let me explain the outline. What you would do is I conditionally accept your offer upon proof of claim that I violated, whatever they said you did, tech expectations, whatever. I conditionally accept your offer upon proof of claim that I indeed did violate, tech expectations, blah, blah, blah. Please list under your full commercial liability under penalty of perjury in a sworn affidavit and respond within 10 days. And if you could put, the creditors don't argue, so what we always point to is Matthew 5:25. It says, agree with your adversaries quickly, or it says, don't argue with your enemy. So
Right. That's
being a creditor, so I conditionally accept. So you got to put the burden of proof on the other party. You can't put in a positive statement form, I did not do this. You have to say, all right.
Hey, let me answer this question.
Well, hold on, because you're going to keep asking more questions. So let me finish my point, and then you can...
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay,
you put your letter together and your affidavit together, and you're going to put in a negative avertment affidavit, which is going to say, which is going to be attached to your conditional acceptance letter. It's going to say, affiant, which is you, have no verifiable, sees no verifiable evidence that... employee, which would be you, violated such and such terms of whatever the hell they say. And affiant believes no such evidence exists. That's going to be your affidavit. You're not putting in the positive, I didn't do this. Because you don't even know what they're saying you didn't even do anyway. So, bottom line, okay, you do that, yeah, you get that notarized, you put a conditional acceptance letter, you put a certificate of service together which shows that a third-party witness in the Secretary of State's office mailed your documents for you. So we don't use the notary necessarily just to sign our document. We use them to witness our whole process. We're going to have the notary go to the post office and mail those three documents and any other exhibits related to, you might put an exhibit of notice of, hey, I am in receipt of your notice of termination. Actually, sorry, you would say, if they give you the notice of termination, you hold on to it, you agree to it. So you got to mail it back to them. The original that they gave you, you got to mail back to them. So basically what you would say is, I did receive your notice of termination hand-delivered on this date when I was here, to which I am returning to you and conditionally accepting upon proof of claim that, and then you'd put, what we just said. Then you'd put the negative vermin affidavit, the certificate of service, and the exhibit, which would be their notice of termination and any other documents to show the statement of the facts of what happened, mail it to them through a notary. 10 days go by, they don't respond, your notary signs a certificate of non-response / non-performance, and then you send a follow-up letter giving the other party due process, basically saying, hey, you didn't respond in 10 days, here's another copy of what I sent, and if another 10 days goes by, you're agreeing that you are now liable for damages for whatever, you know, whatever. You know, you could say, I conditionally accept you terminating the employee upon the prepayment of the next 10 years of wages, and I'll be okay with that. And if they don't respond to your three-step paperwork process, they agreed to pay you wages for the next 10 years, and you can force that and get the money for it, or you can lien them up. You can put a commercial lien on them, and you can even go into court and get a court to get a judgment in your favor, and they can be liable to you for the next whatever you agree to. You can make a contract for whatever you want. You can say, I agree to you terminating and moving our contract. It's basically you're renegotiating with them. You're giving them a counteroffer. It's offer, counteroffer. Hey, you want to terminate me, then I'll agree to that. Remember, they can't do it without your agreement. So they give you an offer. You got 30 days to respond. If 30 days don't go by, you agree to it. But you can renegotiate and go back and forth an infinite amount of times. But it has to be done in paperwork, through a notary, with a witness, with the negative of vermin affidavit. But you could say, I conditionally accept your offer to terminate the employee, me, upon the prepayment to me of 12 chocolate chip cookies. You just have your mom bake me 12 chocolate chip cookies, and I'd be happy to never work here again. Now, you got to keep showing up to work. If you get this notice of termination, you're still renegotiating the terms of, you know, hey, I'll leave under certain terms, sure. Right? Hey, police officer wants to pull me over the side of the road and detain me